Hello and welcome to Commentary on Fire. Don't ask me what number it is. I'm your host, Stuart Sutherland. And joining me today, we've got Ken.
Hello.
So, today we are tackling The King of Comedy, starring Robert De Niro.
Right on, Jerry Lewis.
Yeah, that other bent. Ah, anyway, you know we're bullshitting you. We are indeed covering the Stephen Chow movie, starring Karen Mok, Cecilia Chung, and a Dalmatian, according to the DVD cover.
And Pringles.
Okay. Seriously, I have not watched this movie in years,
all right.
So a lot of it's got to be coming back fresh.
Remember, starring Pringles.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
We'll find out.
And there is a little doughboy on Stephen Chow's shoulder, but I have a sick thought that might be not dough. So, yes.
It's actually not one of our no research commentaries.
Exactly. It? We have done... nothing has been... It fucking says on the tin, no research. So...
But then again, based on our history of no research, which I think we've done two, Island of Fire and Rule Number One.
Yes.
And they turned out rather right, I thought.
Yeah, I think Island of Fire worked out well, and with...
Tons of cost to talk about in that one.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the key, because when we done our Rule One commentary, I felt maybe myself struggling in the later half of the movie.
Yeah, a little bit.
Basically just provide commentary on what we're actually seeing now, rather than bring up any further discussion, but
there's not even
five people in that film.
Yeah. I agree, it was a little bit of struggle, but I think it turned out all right, and I didn't hear any complaints from our
patrons
about
exactly.
That.
So, if you do want to send us suggestions for future commentaries, you can contact us on Facebook, facebook.com/POF Network, Twitter, just @podcastonfire, for our website, just... podcastonfire.com/forum. You can leave your comments there, and of course you could email us podcastonfire@googlemail.com.
And while you cannot leave suggestions via this, I'm going to mention you heard this on a few episodes before, but we are now on Stitcher. You can hear us on Stitcher, not just iTunes, not just on the podcastonfire.com website, but if you download the Stitcher app to your smartphone device, it's at least on the iPhone and the iPad, I guess.
Yeah.
But also you can download it to your computer. You can search Podcast on Fire Network, and you should be able to find each of the different shows on the network, so you can listen to us via Stitcher.
Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure the way we've set up it, if you just like search Podcast on Fire, it should bring up each show. Because
yes.
It pretty much is the show's name, but then Podcast on Fire Network in brackets.
Yes, exactly.
So hopefully just rattling in Podcast on Fire Network should bring up the whole selection of shows.
If anyone subscribes to the Smartcast Network, that's exactly what happens. If you type that in, you see all the different shows that they have, all their 12 or 20 shows that they have on that network. So, welcome, Stitcher audience, to your first commentary.
Mm-hmm. And thank God for streaming, because times when you just want to listen to a show in the move and you don't have to sit by your iTunes downloading a 90 meg podcast and waiting for it to sync.
Streaming was never that good on iTunes, in my experience. I know this sounds like a commercial, but this is still my experience. I think the streaming on Stitcher is way better than iTunes.
Mm-hmm. It's sort of similar to Spotify, where you don't need to carry your music library with you. Mm-hmm. You don't need to have all our podcasts on
also
your device.
Also sponsored by Spotify. No, we're not sponsored by Spotify, no.
Mm-hmm. But Audible haven't got us yet.
No. Nor Mangrates.
Mm-hmm. Nor Skittles. Uh-huh. But still, taste the rainbow.
Did you ever get a deal with that the chocolate hobnob company that you... that was the focus of one of the podcasts?
There's no answer to emails, it's a bit much, so...
Too bad.
But yeah.
But maybe Pringles, after this commentary fire, maybe Pringles will contact us.
Sure, okay. It's probably about the time where we should stop like bantering back and forth and actually get on with the film. So if you own a copy of the Universe DVD, and I've been told there's different copies, but the film is all the same. There's no difference in running times. It's
yeah,
just differences...
Yeah, the difference is extra material was greater on one of the copies, the first, and the latter ones that didn't have all the pretty useless gala premiere and stars interviews at the day of the premiere. So you're not missing much. There was no, there were no English subtitles on that stuff anyway for those who needs it.
Mm-hmm. Okie doke. So we're doing our usual where we do our countdown to click.
Via the on-air function on the DVD.
Yes, we are going right for the on-air, which always made me think, like, that's more radio than movie, but fair dues.
It sounds cool.
Mm-hmm. Like, we're going on-air, it's like we're watching something live, but they're waiting for us to start it. So, let's get the show on the road. You ready, Ken?
I am.
There's no sleep mode?
Nope.
Nope. Coffee is starting to kick in, so I am out of my sleep mode. So, 3, 2, 1, click. Now, I'm guessing that's the Stephen Chow's production company right there. The Overseas Limited.
Yeah, it's been visible on a few movies, yeah.
Aye, because I think I've not seen it on, they think I've seen it on any other film outside of his.
No, not really. Shaolin Soccer, I saw it on there.
Yeah.
And there was always an amusing detail for me. The bottom was always slightly matted. You couldn't see it exactly saying the star overseas, but that's Hong Kong sloppiness for you. But man, King of Comedy, when in your like Stephen Chow cycle did you watch it? Do you remember?
Now, I think I was actively looking for it. I think it was just by chance. I'd actually came across it on eBay and there was like an hour left and no one had bidded and it was going for like £1.
Wow.
And I was like, fucking hell, I'm just going to keep an eye on this. And I did eventually want it for like £2. And
right on.
Because it was, I'd probably gotten through the main stages of, I'd always been a big fan of, as you'd expect, Shaolin Soccer and God of Cookery.
Mm-hmm.
And this was before Kung Fu Hustle. So I eventually acquired this. But to be honest, I've only watched the film once. It's so weird. I do know it's a good film, but shit, there's so many films you need to watch in life. I force myself to rewatch them because I feel like, man, Hot War's not getting enough attention.
Oh, the eking hours are creeping in here. Speaking of creepy, this is like a typically wonderful, silly opening to a Stephen Chow movie. And when his first line outside of the dialogue he has with the water is "cut," and when he's directing zombies, that in actuality outside of the camera does not look like zombies. You know, I'm in the mood. This is gold all of a sudden, you know, and obviously it's setting up that Stephen is an aspiring actor, aspiring, you know it all about film acting and filmmaking.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love these reactions.
Well, it's a place to his versatility, and his stick is on his head. He's abnormal was a great subtitle within this. Yeah, but I think it was fairly early on in my cycle, this, but in all honesty, the first one I watched was Curry and Pepper.
Ah, yeah, I did get a copy of that on VHS.
Yeah, the Lethal Weapon style action comedy with him and Jackie Chung.
And Blackie Cool directing and being the main bad guy.
Yeah, it's not a Stephen Chow comedy in that vein. It was a regular comedy, but it's pretty kick-ass. I do like it. They have fairly good chemistry, and the action is absolutely terrific. Some great gunplay, bloody gory gunplay by Blackie Coe. I think he choreographed Curry and Pepper as well, and plays like a Thai bad guy in that movie, so he's dubbed into Thai.
Talking about like fucking gunplay, it looks like he's just walked right into the set of The Killer. Like right into the church, get some fog in there. Oh, how fitting.
Well, you're supposed to be disposable in these kind of movies, yeah. But man, talk about here we go. Here's echoing probably when Li Lik Chi and Stephen Chow, who are the directors of this, put this together. They put this together as fans of what John Woo can do. And I think it's a great, great little homage to, you know, to it, to Akela. And it's actually very kick-ass.
A small nod towards Girls and Guns.
Absolutely. And Karen Mok, I mean, yeah, I would buy her in an action role. And yeah, 2-3 years later, she wasn't so close.
The Doves.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And it's one of those scenes that could have been very hokey. But I think the reason why it works is what I mentioned, but also that they go for it in terms of the squibs and all of that. This is like a real scene that is going to be interrupted Stephen Chow style, eventually.
There we go. No one wins in that situation.
No, that
not even the Doves.
The Doves are disturbing the scene. So I think if they would put their minds to it.
Hogging the scene.
Cut!
That's pretty messed up how they've done that all in one take as well.
Yeah, it's a very brave. Then again, you have Breaking News by Johnny Toe a few years later. They had a major one take deal opening scene, so, and that was across like sets and streets and in and outside and all of that. So it can be done. Hong Kong filmmakers and action directors are pretty, you know, up to standard.
That chick's scary. She's got fucking Jaws teeth.
but here's the pretentious actor, you know. I think my character needs a bit of motivation and backstory. What's my motivation? You're a fucking extra, dude. Yeah, and you hear that on sets in real life every now and again, like extras and trying to be more important than they actually are just to get into character. Stevens,
where are they going to get a professional extra?
Yeah, I mean, kick out the guy who doesn't know his job properly. I mean, you're right. You need to rehire some maybe veteran players in the extras department rather than the young players, because the veteran players know better. And who knows better than this fucking guy?
And he looks so fucking young as well.
1999. Oh. Look at him. That's professional, man. Yeah.
It's like he's coming fresh out of First Strike.
I mean, did you see where did you learn acting, man? I mean, if you're a real genius. And of course, the same year, Stephen Chow had a cameo in Gorgeous.
Yes. So
they exchanged the cameos. I don't remember if this premiered during the Lunar New Year. I'm pretty certain Gorgeous did. So, but they did exchange cameos. Stephen was a cop with a German Shepherd that I think just dragged him.
And then it just cuts to the obvious dummy being pulled down a street.
Yeah, exactly. So they changed their little cameos. This was funnier.
And that was the thing. I'm pretty sure Stephen's cameo never made it to any of the international prints.
Correct. Like, it was
the UK DVD. He just wasn't there.
No, I can stand by that cut.
Yeah, exactly. Because at that time, it's like it's not a well-known name. It's just this guy's came in and got dragged off by a German Shepherd.
Yeah, but still fun enough. I remember the reaction by the director when seeing Jackie's acting was one of those exaggerated arms in the air. Yeah, almost like I had an orgasm looking at how great acting is. So that's part of like the background exaggeration that that this movie is, I think, is good at. And this movie, I think, has little or less of the dialogue-driven comedy. That's why I think this is more appreciated than many movies way back in the day that had more verbal-based commentary, Stephen's movies. But that's a question. Did you ever feel like left out of a Stephen Chow comedy looking at, I don't get this. They're talking, they're having a laugh. Apparently it's funny, but I'm not getting this. Did you ever have that?
No, I never become, like, they do talk about a lot of it's in the dialogue. There's even like a certain name for the style, but like
Mole Tao, nonsense comedy.
Yeah. Essentially. And
There's our first shot of nakedness in this movie. Little boy nakedness. Yep.
That guy must be in his late 20s by now. the stuff never really... Like, I would be completely unaware of it unless like all these fucking Bay Logan commentaries he mentions and interviews it's brought up. But I wouldn't notice. The only times I actually really notice like people's fucking finding things more funny than me was when I was at the Terracotta Festival, and there was comedies and people were just laughing at points, and I was like, "How? Wait, what was that funny for?" And there was, like, it's obviously people that are fluent with their Cantonese or Mandarin, like there's maybe more, or they fucking pick up more of the jokes, or like that shit's impossible for somebody that doesn't know the language. And even if you do, it's like, could you, I reckon it might be localized. It might be like fucking this Chu Chow reference, and might be just fucking like digs at other dialects.
And it's impossible also to translate sometimes, even if you do a good job, because you need to localize translation when overseas and all that, and it's bloody hard. I remember one instance where someone explained a verbal joke to me in a Stephen Chow movie too. Actually, one was Fight Back to School, where Stephen and Uma Thad are walking out of an office. They're talking about aeroplanes, but apparently it's all a play on the words of masturbation or something like that. And the subtitles reflect nothing of that, absolutely nothing of that. And apparently in God of Gamblers 2, the Stephen Chow and Andy Lau one, apparently the card, sorry, the word for ace or card is the same as the word for cigarette. So they apparently do a lot of word jokes based around that. But still, those movies I still found very funny. So I didn't feel left out either as such. It was not a 100% local comedy.
Yeah, I've always really wanted to get hold of the rest of those God of Gambler films.
Oh, they're brilliant. The two is funny as hell. Three is time travel comedy. Actually, they put him. They make him travel back to a plot of the Bund, the old Chow Yun-fat gangster soap or drama where Ray Loy plays Chow Yun-fat's character. It's really funny. Gong Li is in it as well. So it's Stephen Chow and Gong Li in like their first or second movie together. The second being Fleur Tong Scholar, and it's not called Flirting Scholar. It's called Fleur Tong Scholar.
I'm always mind there being two God of Gambler threes, in the sense there's like the early stages, which was that the Stephen Chow one,
No, that's the Leon Lai Jordan
Jordan
Chan
Chan
one,
one,
which was 1996, but that
oof.
was based in around Do San. You know, the Chow Yun-fat character was a prequel to his character. The Stephen Chow movies, he's the saint of gamblers, Do Sing. So it's a clear distinction. But they are very funny, and the God of Gamblers 2 is the sequel to the original God of Gamblers because Andy Lau's character is the same. But then when the real sequel to God of Gamblers with Chow Yun-fat came, Andy Lau did not appear in that one. So I always thought those were the better ones. So, you know, the first God of Gamblers is great, and then the Stephen Chow ones were superb. The God of Gamblers Return, okay, but not you know, nothing on the original, you know. Nothing like the original. Yeah, and I mean, I haven't seen this movie in a long, long, long time, but you know, Steven's attempt to like bring to teach acting, I think essentially is wants to teach acting to anyone he's working for the local community. It seemed like he had like a community center that he was taken care of and all of that. But here, I remember this guy in the middle speaking in this very exaggerated triad torch, and even the subtitle seems wants to help us in
Aye,
understanding
in
this.
brackets.
Yeah, you can almost see Stephen Chow corpsing.
And there's 10K man on the right,
Yep.
who's like a pretty much became a regular Stephen Chow player, didn't he?
Yeah,
I mind him having, it was either bright silver or bright green hair in God of Cookery.
I don't remember him in that one. But I've seen him in tons of movies though, including that one.
Nah, he was
And
one of the brothers in Shaolin Soccer.
the go not the goalie he was. So well, he became the goalie eventually. But
Was it not the Iron Vest or something? He ran with the ball in his gut.
yes.
That is such a fucking good film.
And one of the henchmen of the Axe Gang in Kung Fu Hustle that always gets beaten on the head by D Danny Chan in that scene in the car.
Oh,
It's like,
yeah, he is like
like.
the wee right-hand man that, when he's that scared to light the cigarette, he fucking sets his hair on fire and.
Yeah, exactly. And he gets his head beaten a lot by Danny Chan, who just wants to watch the fight in the courtyard with the loot. So it's like,
Aye.
get out of the way! Psh! Get out! Here's a way to make a grown man cry, I guess.
Stomp him with your flip-flops.
It's hard to like get into the movie when you've not seen it in a long time, but also get into the movie, this movie period. It changes tacks, this movie. It changes beats, it changes moods. And it's one of those, while it is one of those Hong Kong movies that has a lot of different moods in them, it feels different. It feels a bit harder to. There's no again.
This
Ding, 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 ding.
is like that moment they kind of stop talking and go, "Oh, man."
What's up with this? What's up with this? What's it gonna lead to? But what I was getting to is that this has, so many different moods, especially towards the end, that you're not quite sure what they're doing anymore. I think a lot of people always had issues with the ending. Not at least me. I didn't know if they were serious or not with their gunplay ending, essentially. But it's I'm gonna try and see if I can figure out what it's truly about. Because now it's been like, I don't know, 7 or 8 years since I watched this. Now maybe I'm more used to these flip-flop emotions in movies. Back then I didn't, and maybe I didn't embrace it as much back then. So it can be it's gonna be interesting.
When I saw that wax umbrella there, it just gave me flashbacks to Mr. Vampire 3. Or wait, which one was it? Ah, it was the third one where they got him. They open up the umbrella and the ghost jumps in it, and it closes it, and you could see the umbrella swell when they were trying to get out.
Yeah, that's a clever little effect. Here we go.
Just for that brief moment, I thought, is it maybe there's gonna be ghost play, but there's not. There's.
Ah, innocence pre-photo sex scandal.
Yep.
Well, having said that, I think Cecilia has not, in my eyes, lost any respectability or anything. It's that twat Edison Chen
Yeah.
who made sure that happened. And but I think this was like her first closer to main role, if not her first role, period. I think she might have had like a minor appearance somewhere else. Was Tokyo Raiders later in this?
Tokyo Raiders was probably about 2000.
Right, so it was at least a year later,
Ah.
a year or two later. But man, talk about a breakthrough! That because this really was a breakthrough for Cecilia Cheung, obviously. And she was very sweet and on board with the type of comedy that was demanded of her. And the reason I'm saying sweet is because the movie is going to go down those routes eventually, because it is a rather sweet movie. For Steven, therefore, sort of a development or a breakthrough in doing something different, something more humane, even though it's crazier and politically incorrect as hell and immoral as hell. I mean, she plays a hostess, I believe, even though she's in her schoolgirl. Yeah, tonight is college girl's first love evening. So there you go. But Stephen obviously, managed to do all like this, be a director who can direct, sweet emotions out of you. And I haven't seen CJ7 yet, but from you, I heard that was like a very heartwarming movie.
Oh, it is a brilliant film.
And not reliant on the Muay Thai nonsense comedy as such either,
No, it does. It just is a wee emotional roller coaster.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, like, fucking Stephen Chow, like, he hasn't done anything since, has he? He's not in the middle of working on any projects or. Well, directors-wise, because I know he's, like, one of another 100 people that made a cameo in Founding of the Republic, but.
Yeah, probably.
Oh,
Here we go.
dude.
I knew this guy's name once,
Is it
but
Bats? Is it.
yeah, it's something like that. But obviously, he's also known as one of the ugliest people to appear
Oh,
in
good
Hong
lord.
Kong movies.
They're
Not
fucking
real.
exploiting that in this case. Is like, right, we need to make him worse.
And let's.
Oh! That poor man.
Going from worse to worse. And I think, again, I might be totally wrong. I think I've seen him do kung fu in like a movie or two. So maybe he's
Aye,
like
aye.
he's fishing at that and all of that. So, but Do you remember if the nose-picking transvestite was in this movie? Well, we'll see.
I remember.
We'll,
but,
I will
find
be
out.
because that cameo by that actor, I knew his name once, he's actually in Once Upon a Time in Trial Society 2 in a larger role, that actor that plays the nose-picking transvestite. But he's obviously in Shaolin Soccer, the
Yeah.
one who does the makeover on Vicky Chow's character. Quite horrific makeover. that was one of those, okay, I guess that's funny to them. Type of cameos, because in God of Cookery he just froze the guy across the room.
Exactly.
And I was picking transvestite, because why not beat up transvestite? and that was always the staple of Stephen Chow movies to me that I still love to this day. One guy being beaten up by 5, 6, 7, 10 other guys, you know. Everyone, you know, gathering up in a ring to beat someone up violently or viciously. It's in Kung Fu Hustle, it should be in Shaolin Soccer as well.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently Steven loved that joke. And he's in Hail the Judge as well, when someone just says, like, what are you going to do, beat the shit out of me? And then, you know, that comedy happens in quick beats, which always like it. I always love Umandat, who is in this movie as well.
Yeah.
He inhaled the judge. After one of those scenes that I described, he essentially turned to one of the audience members in the courtroom and is like, I don't know why he requested to have himself beat up. We just did it. Hail the Judge, by the way. Best Stephen Chow movie for me. Did you ever see that one?
Hail to the Judge, no.
Yeah, it's actually, once you get past like the 20, 30 minutes, first 20 minutes, it seems like a tough comedy to take in. A lot of verbal jokes and all that.
Oh. Oh.
You know, the quickness of Hong Kong movies, you know, things gotta move fast. They shoot these movies in 1-2 weeks sometimes, so no elaborate makeup, just throw the blood and goo on them.
Mm-hmm. Wee.
Probably real equipment.
Aye.
If it's, because we get a behind the scenes look at Hong Kong movies. I would have loved to see a real trampoline instead, you know, akin to the old days.
I mind seeing shots, that extra footage, Game of Death, that had some scenes where, I think, like, James Tien had jumped towards, must have been, I think, Hakeem Abdul-Jabbar.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when their fight was extended, I think he basically jumped into the shot and got grabbed by the neck. And
mm-hmm.
But they do that all the time, just emphasize an entrance, like they're either off camera standing on a table.
Look at this. This is the type of scene that I was talking about.
Folding chairs.
Yeah. Just everyone beating one guy, albeit here or here, they were just trying to kill a cockroach. He was doing his job, you know, a good extra. So he learned. All about learning. Let's see if he's all right. I'm fine. Thank you for your concern. So I think Stephen has, to many people, and especially one of my closest friends that has watched a few of these movies, he always loved that Stephen was very kind. He was very, you know, amidst all this madness, he was so kind and so pleasant, you know, sympathetic. The country bumpkin, often, you know, the guy coming to the big city. And I think this is one of those great scenes where audiences are like, man, I love this guy's presence. You know, he did well. And the audience are happy for him to do well. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And he's never been unsympathetic overall. I mean, there's been elements in his movies where he's quite a dick.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in Kung Fu Hustle, obviously, trying
to
be a bad guy.
He's brilliant. Like, it's such a brilliant film. He does so well in it, but he's such an asshole in it.
Laughing at the girl. Ha 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 ha!
That is the best one, where he's just getting so loud and just... he's fucking pointing and screaming, hollering. He's like,
uh-oh.
Oh, this man's just a dick on all levels.
This is the perils of movie sets. Ooh.
Uh-oh.
Karen Mok, the last movie before this, the last Stephen Chow movie before this, she was ugly as hell. Because God of Cookery was, she was made up to be very, very ugly.
Oh, was it? I vaguely remember. Was she scarred or?
Well, buck teeth and probably scarred and all of that. So, and I don't think I had seen a Karen Mok movie firmly before this. So I didn't know what she really looked like. But obviously, she looks absolutely beautiful. Karen Mok, and
all for the lunchbox.
Yeah, the classic lunchbox on the Hong Kong movie sets, you know, your rice box. And it's obviously a quite, you know, that was the case, you know, there was no
Oh.
luxury on Hong Kong movie sets. You know, Chow Yun-fat, Andy Lau and the likes, they didn't have their own trailer with their own catering and shit like that. No, everybody sat down on the streets, ate their rice box, and got on with filming. I don't think Andy Lau and Chow Yun-fat would have had time to sit down in a trailer because they were off making so many movies.
Oh, and Mang
Good
Tat.
old, good old Uncle Tat.
Donning a fucking doom.
Yeah, and in God of Cookery, no mustache. He was not recognizable in God of Cookery. He played this corporate-like enemy, I guess, of it.
Oh, yeah, I mind
Fat
it.
and Chow.
It is kind of a little bit big hair.
Yeah, exactly. One of the like long-lasting comedic collaborations is obviously between Stephen Chow and all the way back to All for the Winner, and plenty of other movies, and they built up great chemistry together.
Yeah, I love them in the Fight Back School movies.
Oh yeah.
Because, I'm being vague again, but was, you know, the janitor in there as well?
At least
Like,
the first
he was
one, I
something like the
think.
school janitor.
Yeah, I think so. At least the first one. The second one, I don't remember. Other than, it was great the second one to have an early 90s movie from Stephen Chow be in sync sound. The second one, it has live sound, which is always great. Even though Stephen always dubbed his voice. But still, it adds, obviously, it's a logical and thing that obviously professionalism is heightened to a large degree when shooting live sound.
I always loved the scene in Fight Back School 2 when they're interrogating. Man, it had to be. I think it was Blackie Coe again, and they're just holding a phone book against him and started beating hell out of it.
Yeah, going Danny Lee on him. Going OCTB on him. You know, phone books and all. And I guess the girls need to know how to act in front of their customers. Therefore, they go to Stephen Chow's, you know, to get some acting tips. And I know Cecilia was very abusive towards Stephen in this scene.
And as he just has that naivety about him, where it's like, no, they're here to learn, it's fine.
It doesn't really take. He can swash, you know. He doesn't take abuse like he doesn't feel the abuse as such, you know, or he can swallow it easily. You know what I mean? So it's not necessarily ignorance either. You know what I mean? You damned extra. In fact, I'm an actor.
I would have hit her with a folding chair by now.
And they would have been able to make that comedy work. Just have a folding chair come out of left field and all
That looks like a fucking toothpaste tube of wasabi.
that.
That's a practical joke waiting to happen.
But I think, amongst other things in this movie, I think this comes from a personal place as well, you know, or a little bit of constructive place as well, to like that acting is important, you know, and showing emotions in a very basic way is important, and also, I mean, obviously he's a struggling actor, so to keep at it, you know, practice your art is important as well, you know, drive, you know, have drive, have passion and all of that. Don't be distracted, and I'm saying that because he will be distracted in a later scene, the later classic scene in this setting up the fact. Here we go. Was that a folding chair? Why must you behave like this? Don't panic. It's all right.
Ah.
And look at this. This is the typical comedy where someone gets beaten, you know, off screen. You know, I love that. Stephen was. And they had that in a movie like Tricky Brains as well. And I'm only saying that because Tricky Brains, I think, has the classic wear for Stephen Chow. I think he has a tracksuit that says, "I am naked," or something like that. He goes to a club and he has that stupid, like, tracksuit, "I am naked," which is a classic thing out of that Andy Lau Stephen Chow movie, where I think Stephen plays like the king of tricksters or something like that. He they hire him for. trickery, I guess. It's a very funny early 90s movie, that one.
This is where acting skills gonna have to come into play.
Yep, exactly.
Oh.
Let's make fun of obese people. Or not, maybe. Maybe they will not go that low.
There we are. Oh. You'd know that was an arm wearing a shoe.
Wonder if this was even ever up for consideration for a remake. It probably was, but it wouldn't have had this kind of flavor, you know, and this kind of abusive comedy. It would have just been the idea of remaking this story, you know what I mean? So Shaolin Soccer was up for, I think, a remake consideration at one point. Mm. And there was even like a fake by a fan poster with King Jim Carrey inserted in Stephen Chow's place. As these things go, not all things turn into remakes. The Killer was slated for a remake once upon a time, starring Richard Gere and Denzel Washington, but that project never materialized.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
And again, they're beating the old dead horse of informing us that there will be a Old Boy remake with Spike Jones taking the director's chair.
Like. Spike Jones or Spike Lee?
Ah, that'll be it. Spike Lee. I'm always the one getting it wrong.
Yeah, but they're both good directors.
I mean, mm-hmm.
Being John Malkovich's Spike Jones, that could have been good for Old Boy. Not really interested in that remake, but maybe they'll do good. I'm a fair fan of Spike Lee. I don't see every movie he's putting out, but you know, so why not? I don't really care, to be honest, because who are we going to stop that remake machine? No. But it's a shame.
I have started a comment on IMDb.
Okay. Join me in the resistance.
Like, I have a petition. Let's sign it. No? Okay.
Hello? Crickets. But yeah, it's a shame they're so uninteresting, just a minor tangent on remakes. Now, the last two horror remakes that I saw the trailers of, man, did they look boring. Fright Night and The Thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Fright Night, great fun movie originally. The trailer looks so boring.
I've never heard of the original Fright Night. And
go and watch it. It's actually really, really fun and kind of a scary vampire movie as well.
Mm-hmm.
Roddy McDowell, I think, is in it.
Aye. And I couldn't tell. Is it not a British one? Like, because I know it's David Tennant being the lead, like the guy who played Doctor Who.
No. The original Fright Night is...
I'm talking about the remake.
Oh, that I don't know.
Aye, I'm pretty sure David Tennant seems to be the main... It looks like the fucking Ringmaster.
Just look boring. And The Thing, I mean, The Thing by John Carpenter is a remake. Obviously, this riffs a bit more on The Thing by John Carpenter because they have his music at the end of the trailer. Look boring, man. So it's a shame.
I can't tell if that has been a remake with the sense that they've replaced, Kurt Russell with the chick from Scott Pilgrim?
I don't know. I don't really care.
Okay.
So, whatever. King of Comedy, if there ever was a remake consideration, that's probably not going to happen because it's such an obscure one. You know, it would be hard to say, you know, promote it as a remake, you know.
Yeah.
Because, it's a Stephen Chow movie, but Stephen Chow's name is heavier when connected to other movies, you know. So if they would have been had a remake of Shaolin Soccer, that could have been a marketing tool, you know. Mm-hmm. So
it's the same where, oh, good Lord.
What do you think of
Eyes of a Dead Body?
What do you think of Cecilia?
She's decent. She's good. Like, I've seen her in several films because she has done several with Ekin Cheng. But
and what about?
It's things like Lost in Time that are supposed to be really big deals for her, and I've watched them and they've just never grabbed me.
It was her award-winning movie, and deservedly so. She was really good in that
movie. I have got it on my banned list, da-dum-dum-dum. So I will be having a second time around.
You needn't lock others. Okay, that's great. You needn't always take initiations. You know, she's learning not to lock legs at all times. That's brilliant cutaway comedy as well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Cut from medium shot to long shot and she's locked legs. You know what? This might not be as silly techniques as they look. You know what I mean? So I think in acting school, you do need to learn posture and emotions and all of that. So it's not. But do watch Lost in Time. It's a very sad movie, but a very uplifting movie too. And she is very good in it. And Lau Ching-wan was so great in it. In a time where he had not done much dramatic work for quite a long time, he was in a string of not very good comedies. And so it was great seeing Lau Ching-wan back, Derek Yi back. Yeah, go ahead.
No, it's and Lewis Koo had a some short time in it as well,
Yeah, he plays
like for the obvious.
the dead husband of her, and he appears sporadically throughout the movie. He dies in minute one of the movie, obviously. This was a face I recognized. I think the guy they cut away to is the guy on the train or bus in Kung Fu Hustle that
Oh
picks up
yeah, he
the four eye, the
fucking
four
does
eyes.
the snake posture, and then he just grabs both of them by the heads and starts ramming them into the
Yeah.
chairs.
And having said that, I think he's in Shaolin Soccer as the guy who hides all the wrenches and weapons in his pants
Right, aye.
in the training
With the other
match.
team. Oh,
Yeah.
it's like I'm a
I'm a
mechanic.
plumber. I use
Aye.
these. These are tools. And I know Steven loves that guy. Steven was on Swedish TV at the time of Kung Fu Hustle, which was in a half-hour interview, which was like, whoa, is this true? And I remember they showing a clip of that scene in Kung Fu Hustle where on the tram or train, and Steven was just laughing his ass off in the studio. You know, that guy, he's too funny.
That thing, like, when we're actually talking about Lost in Time, it brought actually a similar movie in my mind in the sense of The Floating Landscape with Corinna Lau, that Loy Yu,
Liu, yeah.
and it was basically a relationship between them, and Eakin Cheng plays like the dead husband.
Yes. Yeah, that's a good one. I did like it. One of those, dealing with grief type of dramas, but not melodramatic as such. The magic about Lost in Time is that it gets melodramatic when it gets to, a bursting point, when characters have held it in.
I just love the gold chain.
Yeah. Here we go. We're leading up to the scene where, obviously Charles' character is enlisted by different people to learn like how to handle situations, to learn how to act. And I mean, this is probably a point where I'm just gonna watch the movie a little bit because I want to see Steven being distracted.
How the hell could you be angry holding a cornetto?
It's like the Shaun of the Dead thing there when they wake up. Cornetto! I'll remind you from time to time in this dim place over here. So, I'm just gonna watch the beats to see how it's distracted, or if they just cut away quickly to whatever. If people have not seen the surprise or are watching this commentary for the first time, having not seen the movie, I'm not gonna spoil this yet. What happens? Posture? Yeah, it's. I would have loved to. That actor to the right being a famous triad actor, but seeing him in profile, I don't think that's the case.
Would've been the perfect time for Michael Chan.
Yeah, or like Alan Choi or anyone from Young and Dangerous, I mean, dude, I don't know if this coming up would have been cut from international prints or not because of it's not, illegal. I'm gonna say.
Oh.
Here we go again.
And another reason they might want to cut
Yeah, it's not illegal nudity, obviously, but I mean, there's touching involved.
it.
I mean, maybe that, despite it being a comedy, it would have been too much for. Here we
Oh.
go. Good old Lees UK.
Aye.
A staple of Young and Dangerous?
Yep, Brother K.
Brother K,
No
there you go.
doubt. Oh,
Producer and actor.
no. What now? Oh.
No, this is not right. This is not right. He's not as tall as him either, so.
Oh, seriously. I am so glad I've got my front door locked today when, like, my in-laws walking in watching me basically what looks like fucking child torture
A
porn.
lollipop patting on the head
No.
and flickering, brother case, and the kid. Dare you to fool me?
Oh no.
Don't do it. Vixen.
Good
Lord. Oh, but Steven is, how can you be destroyed? And the thing is, he doesn't get beaten up, you know, little, you know, viciously, is the greater comedic effect, you know, to a bloody pulp. Oh my god. How can you do this thing? But it's great, and I assume parents' consent was involved in all of that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, hopefully, anyway. Like, hey kid, here's a lollipop. Come to our movie set.
Those fucking clothes off.
Yeah, it's just me and you on our movie set. It was probably not as creepy as that.
Aye.
And when all else fails, bring the chop. And don't bring the chop. Is he one of those cool, comfortable presences in Young and Dangerous, Robert K? Or is it just one character or several characters throughout that series?
Pretty much just the... Jesus Christ. He is just the one character. Uh-huh. It's sort of like when the triads, like all the people from all the different branches, all the different areas, meet up and have their meeting. Like Simon Yam being the fucking head of the Triad Society.
Mm-hmm.
And like... Brother K being in charge of like one area of like Causeway Bay or something along those lines. So it's just like all these different group meetings. So he's always making appearances as that character.
He's broken. Yeah, one of those big meeting type of scenes, yeah.
He's always one of those fucking personalities in there.
Yeah. Yeah, $20 is a win in itself.
Mm-hmm.
Poor guy. Just completely obliterated mentally. And why not some face slapping and, you know. Oh, my God. It's the simple stuff, but I think you got to be so talented to make that shit work, you know? To get beatings to work, you know? To make editing work for you in that regard, you know what I mean? And I don't think it is easy to pull that off, and you need to be a comedic presence as well. And Steven obviously is that, and he's a genius in that regard. You don't need to reinvent comedy. That's the thing. And I think that's why I always loved Steven, because that
woman must be holding a fucking Luro every time I see her. Like she's taking a dump constantly.
And she's doing that face. Just because.
Yeah.
You know? There's no huge explanation, no local comedy there. I think she's doing that just because. And he's, you know, he was
Calgary mock stunt double.
Yep, he's so good at being an extra, and didn't mind that. And the Doves are on standby.
Oh, the fire. Oh.
And he's doing that stunt.
Yes.
That's Steven.
That's
not CG, fucking CG fire. Like they would have today or shit like that, you know. Because in Hong Kong, safety is not necessarily number one. It's like
save
one
the
of
pigeons. It's what time to fucking discuss this.
Call action. You're going to call cutter action anytime soon? And this is fucking dangerous, man. Mm-hmm. I mean, normally you can see they have gel all over them, and obviously it does, but it's not as visible. You know, the flame, whatever you call the gel.
Jesus Christ, how close does that get? Oh!
I'm betting today, in today's star, so to say, the atmosphere in movies, that would have been CG.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in Asian cinema, they do, unfortunately, they do CG fire. You remember in Infernal Affairs 2? Where they kill off like Arthur Wong or and shit like that.
That was pretty weird.
Yeah, that was pretty bad.
They done the same with Roy Chung in Young and Dangerous 3. They basically had fire in front of the camera and him rolling in the background away from a fire, looking like he's in it. Yes, there is just fire in front of the camera and him standing on the other side of the fire going, "Oh God, no! I'm dying!"
Yeah, I don't know where. I mean, why do it at all when you know it's looks bad? It's not like that effect has gone bad over time. CG live elements, you know, look bad. CG replacing live elements, you know, look bad. CG blood is one of the main culprits of. It's fun though that Uncle Tad is not had a, you don't know what his role is yet. He's just this background character. Normally they are a comedic duo, you know, love and delivery, go, and fight back to school and all for the winner and what have you, and God of Gamblers too. But here he's a, you know, a bit of a mystery character,
But
abusive.
he's not earned his dues yet. He's that is the underlying subplot of this movie. The man just wants lunch.
Man in his lunchbox. I mean, we don't have the sounds on here, but I think they might have. That's her in the background
Those.
clenching her teeth again. They might have dramatic music all over this scene, you know. That would have been a great effect anyway. So, I mean, this movie is, I think, is entitled to change moods, because I think it's always been critically acclaimed as a sweet and funny film. You know, go from that rather, you know, sad face of Stevens, even though it's about a not getting a rice box and all that. But I think this earns that, and here's a great, I don't know her name, but she's in a bunch of movies looking like this for a very, very long time. It seems like she lived for quite a long time. You know, you can see her in 90s movies, in 80s movies, looking exactly like this. A great old veteran granny. And,
It might be really the Simon Yam if she's got that work ethic in her.
exactly. Hey, she was in like even that Barbara Wong movie, Truth or Dare, Sixth Floor Rear Flat, where she had this relationship with I think it's Matthew Chow. It's the co-star of VI. He played against Angelica Lee in VI. I think it's Matthew Chow, and he was playing his music in front of her, and they had this like sweet relationship where she liked seeing, you know, the creativity of this young this youth. So I thought she was really well used, and that was like a 2003 movie by Barbara Wong. One of those youth movies that is actually good, and there was Carina Lam and Candy Lo, among other people, were in that movie.
I mind that just being this an ensemble cast of people I didn't know yet.
It's actually good. Rob sweet, and you don't do youth movies easily as such, you know. So.
Oh, it's this law, like a 10K man's face at the side. Wasn't the last shot, but there he is. Looks like he's taking a dump as well. It was just almost like this blind swordsman.
Wow, sir.
Like, whenever they're blind, they have to have the most screwed up face to emphasize that he can't see,
I'm
which
sorry,
is
but she is
facing
sexy in this scene.
him.
I mean, and I do like Cecilia. I mean, in the showbiz industry, you might have a problem if your voice sounds like that. She has a very hoarse, is that what you say, hoarse or coarse voice?
Course,
Voice, yeah. And in some, you know, here we go, Kung Fu Chow. He knows Kung Fu. If anyone didn't know that, he knows Kung Fu.
If you throw some kicks.
Yeah, exactly. Did that a lot more early on in his movies, like his Fist of Fury in 1991 and all that. But one of the few Category 3 movies from, here we go. No one will ever notice a thing.
Oh, I love it.
that's the old Shaw Brothers technique. One of the few Category 3 movies from Stephen Chow was Fist of Fury in 1991, probably based on language, but the Flirtong Scholar was that as well. So probably based on
Oh.
some multi parts. But what I was saying, in some showbiz circles, people would have like probably said, like, your voice is not good for the mainstream. People would not like you if you have that voice. And thankfully, that was not the case for Cecilia. She got on a very respectable career path. You know, even though Hong Kong Film Awards are sometimes handed out in very random fashion, she did earn Lost in Time, and you'll find that out. It was a very, very good performance compared to like one of those melodramatic performances in Fly Me to Polaris, or however you pronounce that, the Jingle Ma film. She was so over the top in that movie. Lost in Time was by Derek Yee, a well-known dramatic director who can, you know, bring the best out of his performance. It really worked, and she deserved that. But I think prior to Lost in Time, she did do the Korean movie Phailan, which was really good as well. Did you ever see Phailan? Yeah, you got to watch that, and keep the tissues for crying nearby, because it's a heartbreaking movie. Choi Min-sik is absolutely wonderful in that movie. Plays this triad that he gets into a fake marriage with Cecilia Chung's character. They actually never meet, but he gets to know her because I think she writes letters to him detailing her experiences. I guess it's a green card situation, if that's the equivalent you call in Korea, getting a green card, getting to stay in the country. And over time, you know, knowing her only from a distance, you know, it's turns really heartbreaking, and this low life triad, you know, changes his mind about things, you know. And absolutely great movie, Phailan, Phailan, if anyone wanna find it. Then they have one brief scene together, but they don't talk. They just pass each other in the doorway,
right?
But they're very much connected despite. Yeah, one of my favorite Korean movies. So if you want to squeeze it in during Watch Korean Cinema, I would love to see it again. But maybe during the season two of Watch Korean Cinema, if we ever get to a season two.
Yeah, yeah. But when you brought up like Lost in Time there, and you mentioned Derek Yee, it also reminded me of the other collaboration they had was One Night in Mongkok.
Yes.
Where I think Celia Chung was... She was. I think she was just pretty much a hooker, wasn't she?
A mainlander hooker, yeah.
Yeah. Who gets caught with, like, a mainland hitman. Mm-hmm. Well, a country bumpkin who's basically been hired to kill someone played by Daniel Wu. Mm-hmm. And that was, like, my first... probably my real exposure to Derek Yee, at least. Mm-hmm. And it left me a confidence in the likes of Daniel Wu. Because that film is dark.
Very dark, yeah, and great performance by Alex Jetpack Fong as well.
Yeah, yeah. Even Chin Carlock came back in there. I think that was my reason for buying it.
Yeah, why Chin Carlock
was like a supporting actor.
A good supporting actor, very good. Not just a, you know, background player.
Yeah.
Oh, you must have seen Full Alert, therefore, speaking on Chin Carlock.
Oh, of course, of course.
Well, one of his great ones as well. I remember there was a heartbreaking scene in that where he was accused of... gambling or betting on horses in an important situation, and it turns out that was not the case. And I remember it was very heartbreaking to see Chin Ka-lok, you know, he thought he was trusted by his superiors, by Lau Ching-wan, probably. Here we go. Here's the commercial for... And they exchanged shoes, you know, that's sweet. Mm-hmm. And again, I think the movie earns slipping into this mood as well, you know. Mm-hmm. Even though he might have hired her, as a matter of fact, that's what he's doing on the phone right now. He might have actually bought her. 1 to 10 million, possibly, if she's pretty. That's what she costs overnight. And I guess that tin has a lot of savings. Yep. As long as I pressed really well. But this is not a good move because she obviously, you know, I haven't seen the movie for a long time, but obviously she's not in it for the work. Mm-hmm. Probably not, anyway. Knowing this is a Stephen Chow movie, there probably is. There could be a twist in this scene, you know, that she, like, cheers for the money. Bye bye. There's some foreground and background action. Always good to utilize the frame in that way.
Yep. Nothing else for her, I think. It's just a plain old deceit. Well, not deceit, just. Ah, so I'm just a whore.
But well played though, because she didn't like do the whole ex didn't like become angry at him in that place, you know. She, you know, that was it. What a shame.
Never got hit with a folding chair.
Yeah, that would have been funny. That would have been extremely funny.
But these films have always just, and again, there is it's just a, I do love Stephen Chow's films, but I don't think I could ever get around to watching all of them. I do remember coming across watching a unsubtitled copy of Dragon Fight, which was Jet Li and Stephen Chow.
Yeah, well, directed by Billy Tang, the director from of Dr. Lam and Red to Kill, you know, prior to his Category 3 days. So it's amusing that it's prior to everyone's days, you know, including you know, Jet Li. Even though it was an action movie for Jet Li, it was still him trying to find a voice. Not a bad film, actually. It's a pretty decent action movie, and it's also fun to have the Hong Kong movie set abroad.
Aye, and Dick Wei being the bad guy. Aye. It was like I just got sent just this random like VCD of it, and it was just basically Jet Li from I was gonna say Meltdown, but it's
High risk.
High Risk. Yep, it was Jet Li, the cover High Risk.
Well, that is Meltdown, an AKA4 Meltdown, actually.
So there's like that was the cover of Dragon Fight. It was like this just looked like a mainland VCD. It just had the cutout of Stephen, not Stephen. It was actually just Jet Li. Stephen Chow was never mentioned on it.
Weird.
So I think kind of if they just focus on the main selling point, but.
Mainland VCDs and DVDs is always amusing because they, for instance, I bought the VCD of Triad Story, 1990 Triad movie with Stephen Chow, not a comedy at all. And they put, you know, current pictures of all the cast members on the VCD covers. So obviously, that was a bit more grayed up. Stephen, a then current picture of Xing Fuyong, and you know, so for mainland covers was fun in that regard. They tried to, you know, get people to pick them up because they look more like they look today. And they're obviously badly photoshopped too, though.
I remember having a discussion with you back in the ye olde days of Dragon's Den UK when I was doing a competition for the old site HKC UK, and I was giving away copies of must have been oh god, it's the Wong Kar-wai film, like Days of Being Wild. Think it was that one, and that where I had the ensemble cast of Tony Leung, Leslie Cheung, Andy Lau, and all these other broads. And the front cover was basically Tony Leung from Tokyo Raiders, Andy Lau for some random film, Leslie Cheung from another Wong Kar-wai film. And you're just telling me, like, dude, you know these are probably like bootlegs. Like, no, that's just really different cover art. Like, they could be all dressed like that in the film. And I got them for an extremely low price. They're real.
No one can complain about
They're discs. They're on discs. Of course, they're real.
that.
The cases. They might not close properly, but they've got cases.
Sorry about the bad connection, people, but we're doing this live, so no worries. At least there's at least two snot scenes in Hong Kong cinema. This is one, I believe, anyway. The elongated snot. Do you remember this scene at all?
Vaguely, but
Right.
it's like memories are suddenly rushing back to me.
Yeah, the other one is not played for comedic effect. It's actually Jared pointed it out, my This Week in Sleaze co-host, and I do remember it now. In the Category 3 movie Love Chase, there's a dramatic scene where someone dies at the end, and this actor, male actor, really goes for it, and snot is just running through on out of his nose onto his co-star who's dead, and they don't cut. But that wasn't for comedic effect. That was just a happy accident. This is, the audition, and you can't cut during the audition either.
Oh, it just reminds me. Oh, Lord.
You gotta make this work too. You gotta make snot that it has the right consistence so it doesn't fall off, prematurely,
It
especially
just
not on her.
reminds me of fucking when it was Scary Movie making fun of the Blair Witch Project, with that one shot where she's crying into the camera. I'm pretty sure it was a similar deal on Big. I just I feel like I'm going to throw up. The fucking things like that are just a bit too much for me.
Well, it's a and everybody's happy, everybody's laughing.
Man needs a bigger tissue than that. But it is like Karen Mok was another person that's like been quite quiet on my radar. Like I've not seen her in much else outside of things like the later Young and Dangerous movies, as well as Enter the Phoenix.
All right, okay. I forgot most of that because I wasn't too on board with that movie. Was she a love interest therefore? Because I remember the main characters being gay.
She was coming across as a love interest for Daniel Wu, who was the character pretending to be gay. No. He was the gay one, and Eason Chan was the one that's. Ah, oh man, that was a long time ago.
It seemed like Eason could maybe be the one that was already gay. Not to insult Eason if he's listening to this, but I don't know. Again, I've forgotten a lot about Enter the Phoenix. A decent enough first movie for Stephen Fung as director, but not something I remembered. He was trying too hard, in my opinion, to be honest, to be all wacky and stylish, but didn't really work. I mean, speaking of that, Steven obviously wanted to be more involved as a filmmaker, and probably to an extent was earlier than he was credited for, because I think people have said he is actually kind of hard to work for because he demands perfection and everything needs to be a certain way, and if he can't steer the boat, then he probably, after a while, at least felt restricted if he can't steer the boat himself. And it's said that Wong Jing is one of the few people that could tolerate his ways in that regard. What those ways actually means, I can't say, but that's what I heard. But officially, Steven became the director, co-director with Li Lingqi, who directed a lot of his movies and co-directed this one. That was on From Beijing with Love, with Anita Yun and Pauline Chan, as the late Pauline Chan, who starred as the assassin with guns in her boobies, or in her bra rather.
Right, okay.
So From Beijing with Love, obviously a James Bond parody.
Yeah, because there's even the front cover. I just mind that being along the lines of the James Bond films, but I'd never got across that one either. Was there not like a video call in a toilet seat at one point?
Yes, exactly. And a lot of gags that or gadgets that rather were unpredictable. And I remember one of the gags was a gun that shoots the right way once, second time it shoots the other way. So Anita Yun was trying to kill off Stephen Chow, but actually got the bullet twice in her shoulder. Therefore, after all is said and done.
In reminiscence to the fucking Kung Fu Hustle knife gags. Like trying to throw them at someone, but they end up just coming back at yourself.
Having said that, Love on Delivery, I don't remember of if he was the co-director on that. So, but it's essentially from that point onwards that Steven was listed as co-director. From Beijing with Love, God of Cookery, This, Shaolin Soccer was Li Lingqi was still credited on those, but Kung Fu Hustle was, firmly his baby, and and Li Lingqi perhaps one of those that was tolerable to work with. That working relationship was a tolerable one between those two.
And is that a dude that we ever see on screen? Because I, you,
Oh
of
yeah.
course,
I don't remember where, but he's an actor. He can be seen. The only thing I can say is he's like he has glasses. But if he appears in this one somewhere, I'll try to point it out. But yeah, he's been in movies, large or small roles, so usually comedic ones. So, and he is not nice beating up of Cecilia Chang. I mean, this is, you know, borderline. Is this really what we want, this movie? I mean, the bloody beating, but I don't know. I like the brave choice, and apparently local audiences have no problem with it, you know. I guess if there ever was an international cut prepared for this movie,
yeah,
then that would have been stuff that might have been cut out of the movie. Because it's not nice to watch, but it's not supposed to be either. And it's a challenge to an audience and to filmmakers, I guess, to try and get audiences on board with, again, every single mood, including the one where she was so viciously beaten for no fun effect at all. You know what I mean? So, and I think largely this movie works. It's not a movie I can take fully seriously, but I do respond to each and everything I see. You know, it's not I'm not taken out of the movie. I don't know how you feel about that. Wasted too much this movie for you at points.
No, it never gets too much. Like, it's just there's I think he's just taking you out of. Well, like, things along the lines of, like, God of Cookery, and, like, they're not, like, that's, like, a real safety zone of comedy. Like, where he's got these things involved, like, being beaten in a nightclub, and that is kind of, like, pushing it just to see how you're reacting outside of your comfort zone when it comes to Stephen Chow films. But, like, he does, he mixes it up.
He's so fascinated, essentially. Ooh, I'm sitting in a car. I'm going to have fun now. So he's not at all times, you know, his senses is not always tuned, you know, to what's happening outside of him, you know. So, I mean, it's kind of heartbreaking that he doesn't see their relationship as such. One of my other favorites, by the way, by Stephen Chow, and the Night is canon, by the way. Almost all of it is good. That's the problem, including this one. But one of my other favorites is Legend of the Dragon, which is close to the perfect Stephen Chow movie for me.
Yes, the snooker movie.
Yes, sir.
I thought about that there for a second. That is a fun film.
Yeah, and directed by Danny Lee, out of all people, and co-starring Jimmy White, and just an all-round silly movie, and everything kind of works, you know. Gags like after they've ridden, taken a car into the city in a convertible, John Wah and Stephen Chow and company, when the door opens to the apartment that they're going to be in, their hair is standing up, and everyone's smiling. Stephen Chow has this typical Stephen Chow smile on his face, and I love that kind of stuff. Oh, for fuck's sake. my telephone. Pardon me. I'll ring it back. Sorry about that.
No way.
We're doing this live, people. he realized. Cecilia's the girl for her. And we're leading up to... This I don't know if you remember, but the whole Umaltat gunplay ending, essentially. That's coming up. Or do you even have memories of that?
Not at all.
No, okay. Well, it's my main memory of the film that it's like, whoa, what directions are we going now?
What is a fucking gunfight for lunch?
I don't know. I've forgotten about it because it was all so kind of confusing to me. I didn't know if they were playing with us, or if they were making us take it seriously. Or not, and that's why I'm probably towards the end I'm going to look at the movie more rather than commenting on it, but I'm not going to leave too much silences. But it was to many people, I think, is like, we're not sure about this.
Maybe they're just trying to get the most use out of Bruce Law.
Exactly. Good call. The great the action director, but always called also upon providing vehicular stunt work, full throttle among other things. Just great, great guy and a group of guys that he has at his disposal. But great at choreographing regular action, also as visible in the John Woo parodies early in the film.
Exactly. Because you see the opening credits and it says Bruce Law stunt coordination. Like, what kind of stunts are they doing in a comedy? But of course, this is fucking varied.
Oh yeah.
I don't think they were needing him to choreograph like the child's dick being flicked. So.
Let me show you first. Okay, Doyen. Okay.
Let's not go into that tangent. Let's put that one down. But
I'll do it myself first.
I'm a method actor. Oh, I need to stop talking.
No,
But
I'm just kidding. That's bad. That scene is funny. That stuff I'm talking about is bad.
And I'm trying to think. I did watch. I have. I went out and bought quite a lot of Stephen Chow box sets. Even though I say I've not watched much of his, I did buy it. It was like when Fortune Star done those hard white box sets, like the Better Tomorrow trilogy is in this like hard card box set, and they released Legend of the Dragon, and
King of Beggars.
yes, I was questioning either that or Mad Monk, but Mad Monk was a
No,
Shaw
Mad Monk
Brothers.
was, yeah, it was via Shaw Brothers, yeah, so.
So I remember buying that to give it away as a competition prize on the website, like for no reason. It wasn't like I was getting a deal on it. I just went and spent my own money on this box set, watched Legend of the Dragon, and then gave the box set away as a competition prize, even though I did thoroughly enjoy Legend of the Dragon. And it is like you're fucking, you throw it Legend of the Dragon, you're like, right, Kung Fu, maybe Bruce Lee clone. And then you're like, snooker. Like,
Yeah.
what?
Shaolin snooker.
And it's one of these great things. I'd also watched that after Kung Fu Hustle, because I was delighted to hear like all this music that I'd heard for Kung Fu Hustle, realized like the music they'd use for Kung Fu Hustle is actually just a lot of classical Chinese music.
Yes.
It's like I just thought this was just all real authentic music brought in for like Kung Fu Hustle, but no, like you are watching some old. Oh, it was a turd.
I'm a dump of shit.
I thought it was a Cookie Monster. I thought it was dough.
No, the subtitles read, "I'm a dump of shit," so obviously, that's it. And here's the
This was
montage.
dying.
It's the montage of less shit. I'm a dump of shit. I'm gonna have that tattooed on me. What does Uncle Tat has in his undershirt? There.
Good Lord, yes, he's.
Is that a fanny pack or what the fuck is that?
Ah, it is a fanny pack.
Large
A
fucking
bum
one.
bag.
Yeah. Ooh, he has a bit of a bling, Uncle. So that surely
That gives you,
means.
like, some fucking triad thought there.
Yeah.
Like, it's only like it's a fucking the hand of power, the hand of
Yeah.
a rich man coming out.
Yeah. Or something else.
This is me going in blind, Ken. I was like, you just gotta take out a fucking wee chopper and just here's your fucking lunchbox.
It is a sort of a serious gunplay, triads, almost hostage situation at a house coming up. If I remember correctly, that, here you go, he reveals that he's a
There we are.
police officer, so there is actually seemingly something real going on here. But I was never really
I thought, where did this
convinced
come?
they were. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I'm aware that things can come right out of fucking nowhere with Hong Kong movies, but it was strange watching it the first time anyway, not knowing their intentions.
It's strange in the sense that there's not foreshadowing of this.
No, absolutely not. There's no foreshadowing or anything in the movie. I mean, the way it
Shit, it just
starts,
pops up.
you don't expect a sweet little romance either. You know.
I was just about to compare it to Fight Back to School, where Stephen Chow is again undercover, but like with all that shit kicking off, he was sent undercover for a reason.
Yeah, exactly.
Do we know who this dude is?
No, I was just
Yeah.
about to see, was that Uncle Tad up
Oh.
there or someone else? Maybe cameo by Bruce Law, even. Who knows? Maybe. And I'm not sure this was a clear parody of something we knew of, because if it was, then it should have been something out of the 80s, 90s canon of heroic bloodshed movies, when I didn't recognize the beats of it, so maybe it
It
was
should have
just
been a
a.
long grey trench coat, maybe.
Yeah,
Now
exactly.
the
And
guy should have been kind of bald. And then you would judge
then.
your bear tomorrow right there.
Yeah, exactly. If it would have been a parody, they would have had, clearer, or rather, what I was about to say is that it's probably just a parody of the beats that you
Yeah.
see in movies in general. So it's a general.
Sunglasses, guns.
Exactly. Look like a Jingle Ma movie almost.
And if it was stylish haircuts and fucking PVC vests, it could have been Young and Dangerous.
Oh, Andrew Lau or Jingle Ma. I think Umatat looks kind of badass with his
It does.
he
He could
had
easily fall into like a triad role.
yeah, and he'd done serious movies. I mean, he won Best Supporting Actor for A Moment of Romance back in 1990.
Yes, I was just about to say he done serious work in that one.
And he's really good. I mean, he does play this loser triad that does kind of act and sound like he usually does in the comedies, but it is a serious role, and he does very well. I mean, it's a very abused, almost like mentally handicapped character, it seemed. And he does, he's in All About Along, the Chow Yun Fat movie. A movie I liked once upon a time, don't like very much now. I think it's a way too overblown melodrama from Johnny To. And I can watch Chow Yun Fat and anything, but it was very melodramatic. But Uma Thet was, mixed his roles, if you will. More comedy as soon as he struck up this relationship with Stephen Chow on screen. Obviously, with All for the Winner. And not always the funniest guy, but normally they are memorable together. It got better the longer the 90s went. So, I mean, Love and Delivery, they are very good together. A very odd relationship where he donates. I think he trains kung fu with him, and he's supposed to donate money to the main to the kung fu school back in the mainland, in a box. But then I think he steals the money, as a matter of fact, Umatat or something like that. By the way, Love and Delivery, I do a movie where I don't think Jim Davis or Paws Inc. received any royalties from the usage of Garfield in that movie. Garfield has popped up in ma on many occasions in Hong Kong movies. That one quite firmly, because Stephen Chow wears a Garfield mask and fights crime that way. But I don't think Jim Davis or Paws Inc. received any money from that. So it's amazing how many times Garfield has popped up in Hong Kong movies, actually, and even in IFD movies. They have several conversations on a Garfield telephone.
Yes, the infamous Garfield telephone.
Which is very strange, because they recycled that footage. The intent was to shoot, phone footage to have cut into many movies. And they shot it with a Garfield phone. Which is. And three, four different scenes of it, because you can see Richard Harrison in different clothes. But it's such a strange decision. The shot always starts on the Garfield phone, zooming out, the conversation on the phone, zoom in, and then the Garfield phone closes its eyes once the telephone is hooked up. So it's wow.
Man, that's fucked.
So here's okay, obviously, why not write in the script that, do you want to act? Let's act for real. But it's hard to judge now without sound and everything, that if it truly fits. That's why I'm gonna rewatch it, and rewatch it with our commentary afterwards, to see if I can see the intentions now or not. But it is diverting from its obviously main path. But when you don't for a long, long time spot any nonsense comedy within all this, because it's been quite a while, then you're not quite sure what's the deal. Do memories of the scene spark now that you're watching it?
No fucking
No.
clue. This is like an alternative ending for me.
Remember the Pringles thing? It's coming up. Not in this scene, but I would reckon it co-stars Pringles. So, speaking of that, I've never looking at the cover, and I might have missed this while watching the movie now. On the cover of the
Oh.
DVD, there's a shot of a dog. Like a Dalmatian or something like
Yeah.
that. Is that in the movie?
I've not yet.
I mean, it might be, but if it's not, it's probably one of those like, why not? Why not put a dog on there? And maybe it's a joke that we don't get because we don't speak the language. I don't know. And they are crying, all of them, on the cover. It looks like the snot from Stephen
It
Chow's
does.
nose,
It's
and.
some.
There's a little puppet on Stephen Chow's shoulder for some reason.
Yep, that's the shit.
Maybe
It
it's
is
the
the
dump of
bullshit.
shit.
Yes,
Yeah.
it's indeed.
So, lots of why not mysterious, So playing the delivery boy.
Wait, did we just do a retake?
It was a first a different delivery boy. A
Oh,
real delivery boy, it seemed
I
like.
thought that was Steven. I was like,
No,
ah,
no, no.
wait, whoa.
So here's the other delivery boy that was supposed to be come in first. While the other one was unexpected, I guess. This is what happens when you don't do research and forget about movies, you forget the beats of the movies. But again, King of Comedy is hard to keep fully track of as a movie because it goes in so many directions and. You laugh, you cry, you're confused, you're disgusted, and you got nudity, and yeah, people don't care about that kind of thing. And a vague comparison to Westerners like reacting, whoa, in a essentially a light movie, a children's movie. I saw an old anime recently called Taro the Dragon Boy, late 70s anime aimed at children, has quite a few instances of full frontal animated nudity. Mainly first from Taro the Dragon Boy himself, because when he stands on his hands, his cloth falls over him. So, but also towards the end, where when he finds a character he's been looking for, a female character that was actually a dragon, and she's transformed from the dragon to her human form, and as full female. Adult female frontal nudity, not of the nether regions, but in a children's movie essentially. But in Japan, that's probably not a big deal. But
Aye.
in the West, we do raise our eyebrows at that kind of thing. So it's funny not knowing, and it would be funny actually getting an insight into local audiences about do you react at all towards this kind of thing? Especially now that we're watching King of Comedy, is this? Nah, we're on board. We're good. We're good. We're not leaving the cinema. We're not taking out of the movie. We're still gladly supporting yet another King of Stephen Chow movie because I know this was successful at what Hong Kong Million Dollar it ended up at. I'm not sure, but every Stephen Chow movie from a certain point is successful. When he became a bona fide success in the late 80s or 90, I think All for the Winner might have been 90. He picked up audiences quite effectively, and I don't think there's a lot of movies since then that have been flops in any way.
Aye. I think he did have a producing credit on the Dragon Ball Z film.
Oh, really, did he?
Like Stephen Chow, yep.
Fuck me.
That's why I was wondering, I wonder if that had the overseas logo at the front.
Ah, yeah, you know.
But I'm pretty sure all the big studios would have had that
Mm.
taken care of.
I mean, here we go, a little gunplay. And, gore gunplay at that.
Oh,
He got his fucking
that was
head
a
shot
f
off.
good lord.
And that's what I mean. No one is breaking, slipping on a banana peel, getting beaten up, getting a folding chair thrown at them. This is. You
This
know.
is a alternative ending to fucking Fight Back to School 4.
Yeah, sorry, I'm an undercover. that's the CSI thing, you know. After he says that line,
he just puts on the pair of sunglasses so he could just take them back off.
And then the music kicks in. God. And now he's like happy. Did I do it right? Maybe he doesn't know he's in this, or he does, and he still wants to check his performance. You know, good take. Good take.
He's gonna wait for everyone to get back up now. Yeah. Oh, thank God.
And again, I don't remember fully the scene, so maybe they do get back up. No, they don't. That was real, apparently. So, okay, apparently. Apparently he to act for,
Now back to the real film. This was just like some fucked up dream he had.
Pew, pew. Oh, she is rather sweet, and you know, the longer she's been with him and the longer the movie runs, you know, the more she looks like kind of herself, you know, no need to dress up all sexy and for work, you know, so now she's more down to earth, and she deservedly was noticed for this movie. And it's always cool though when actresses are found, you know, maybe she did do some modeling, a little bit of TV, but still, for the sake of argument, when actresses are found, spotted, put in movies, and immediately makes an impression, like it's the thing they were supposed to do, you know, that's kind of wonderful to see. I mean, a male example, in a way different movie, is Sam Lee in Through Chance Made in Hong Kong.
Right.
He was picked off the street, you know, he was skateboarding, and working as an electrician, and then he got into movies. So that's always fun. Like, you know, a kind of Cinderella story.
Aye.
Here we go. Shameless.
What the hell?
You know, they secured a sponsor for the movie, obviously, but let's have fun with it rather than, you know, let's eat. Can you eat Pringles in the middle of the scene? The Pringles company asks. Hell yeah, we can. We're going to make this shit work. Not eating a Pringle, looking like looking at Cecilia, like eating, you know, 10 Pringles in one go. So.
Oh, slice them with Pringles. Stop fighting potato chips.
Yeah, and now he's put up a, you know, whole stage play that he was aiming for. Wonder if it was, you know. It seemed like it was the stage play anyway he was aiming for. Wonder if it was the Fist of Fury stage play he was putting up or not, that they were rehearsing with failed reenactments of, you know.
it does look like a big old...
And it kind of, therefore, I know it's only theorizing because we are not familiar with the movie. Maybe that was his goal. Here we go. Happy New Year. Maybe this movie was released in the New Year now. Gong Fa Choi. But maybe that was his sole goal, to like start putting up this.
there we go.
Yeah. Start putting up this stage play and start from there, you know. Start with something he lived for, you know, a big old. Where his passion is, you know. Oh, here's outtakes of the boy. And there's the outtakes of the
star. Yeah, it's always good that in things on a happy note with outtakes.
Yeah.
Like, it's the same with especially fucking New Year movies.
Yeah.
It kind of keeps a good element to it. Which,
and even though Steven might be like a tyrant on set and shit like that, he still shows he's having fun, you know. So, there's Lilik Chi with Umatat. That's Lilik Chi.
Right.
But you can't see him now, but that is him, definitely. So,
the one behind the credits.
Yeah, exactly. So, summing up, Stu, I want to rewatch the movie again, but I think re-listen to this commentary. But still, a classic Stephen Chow movie, yeah?
Aye, definitely. But, man, if they were really wanting to go for that Pringles sponsorship, they should have fucking censored that kid's like wiener out with a fucking Pringles face, like that logo every time he came on.
Yeah,
exactly. Just a wee white face with a mustache.
Like Craig Ferguson does on The Late Show. If you ever seen that, whenever he swears, he puts a French flag over over himself, and you hear, booyah!
Because sometimes you see fucking, like, shots being covered with like a yellow smiley face. Fucking slap that Pringles logo in there.
It's fun looking at these outtakes. They're all doing like the first scene Stephen Chow does, you know, react like this, react like this, react like this. That's Lilik Chu.
Aye.
So, but anyway, we're signing off now. So
yes.
Thanks everybody for listening.
Yep. Have fun. Enjoy.
Okay. See you later.
Prosper. Expire.
Go and get fat joy.
Another words that have no relevance to this. Right. I think he's waving us off.